Save big money on everything. Now at Menards. Make quick work of your outdoor cleaning project with Masterforce outdoor and landscaping tools. The 80-volt cordless trimmer is powerful, efficient, and hassle-free, so you spend less time working on your yard and more time enjoying the results. On sale now through May 19th. Check out our wide selection of Masterforce tools and see the rest of our deals on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Talk Farm to Me, the podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. This is the best place to meet a farmer. Knowing a farmer in person is actually better, but you will find out more all at once from being here with us today. It's for people like you who care about their personal and family health, saving the planet with real choices that actually have an impact, and building strong, thriving local and regional economies. And because of that, you want, we want, to better understand the lives and work of the farmers who contribute to important solutions and how they do that. It's a tall order, but the farmers and I are totally up for it. I am your host, Dana DePrima. I didn't grow up on a farm, but I have walked a step or two in a farmer's shoes in the last 15 years on my little farm, and I know enough to lead us down this dusty farm road, you and me together, curious about what's going on and concerned about the future. Today, we meet Corwin Heatwall of Farmer Focus. He's a chicken farmer, and his brand, his product, his chicken is in your supermarket. A listener from North Carolina, hi, and thanks to Wendy, reached out to me when she saw Farmer Focus in her grocery store. She read the little mission statement type letter on the back of the package and wanted to know if it was legit. So, I told her I would find out, and here we are with the chief chicken farmer from Farmer Focus.
I grew up on a small dairy and poultry farm and learned all the operations of a farm at a very young age. You know, you learn to love the animals and the land and appreciate all of the little perks of growing up on a farm, the whole family working together. Dad's out there teaching us how to weld at like 13 years old. And then after I left home at 17 years old to chart a little bit of my own course. And unfortunately at that time, it was perceived as more this rebellious spirit, but it wasn't. I was just challenging status quo. Like, why are we doing this way? Which I grew up in a more conservative home. So I felt it was good to create some distance. So went off and started a chicken company and stayed in the farming industry, started a insulation company, a hoof care business for dairy cows and things, but really missed the farm. So it was 22 years old when I bought my first poultry farm. And that's where I was back to farming. And we'd work hard, play hard. But the challenge was that farming struggled to be financially viable. And I had this beautiful farm, 80,000 square feet of barn under a roof. And deep down, I knew that I couldn't pass this farm along to my children and expect them to carry this burden. He was caught in this tough place of, well, do I just milk this farm out and wear it out, sell it to someone else and move along and just exit farming? What do we do?
When you say it was a struggle to be financially viable, why? What were the barriers?
Well, the cost of infrastructure for a lot of farms is rather high. And, you know, the cost of land and construction has continued to go up. So for me, in this case, the farm was cost a little over $1 million. And you have the debt service payments and the operational expenses and performance of the flocks can vary. So there would be seasons where you would do fairly well and cash flow was reasonable. And then you'd have 1, 2, 3 years where your flocks didn't perform as good and there was no cash flow. And so for me, in my case, I could depend on my other sources of income. But a lot of farmers didn't have that. But if you're going to pass it to your children and that's going to be their livelihood, you know, there's way too much volatility in that because you can't depend on a steady income stream to put food on the table. You can't weather a year or two without, you know, any income. So it forces someone to have to create a steady income stream off the farm, full-time job or some other income stream, in order to be able to afford their farm.
Just so you know, according to the USDA, more than 96% of farm families as of 2019 reported having an off-farm job just to offset what Corwin is talking about.
And then you work like a dog because you're working before and after this job, or you're paying an employee, and that cuts in even harder on the cash flow.
I think a lot of farmers are, even at the largest scale, upset with the system, but they just don't know how to change it. What I hear from a lot of farmers is like, they can't get off the treadmill. A lot of things are working against the farmer.
Yeah, you said it well. And to piggyback on that, it really is for the big poultry guys. It has been for probably 4 or 5 decades now, more and more about how to produce the most pounds possible out of the least space at the least cost. And so when that's continually the focus, yeah, you got to maintain quality or your customers no longer will purchase your product, but it's still cost driven, even down to the cent. And that's where over time, farmers kept getting squeezed. And you know, all that stuff just continues to get squeezed a little tighter. And then you have inflationary pressures and different things happening. And that pay scale for the farmer has not nearly kept up with inflation and cost of living and all of those things. So the return on investment just has diminished. And so yeah, all of those reasons are part of the biggest reasons why I decided to start Farmer Focus.
All right. Well, let's hear it. I want to understand, what was the leap? Yep. What were the steps? Well,
yeah, I guess as I have a little entrepreneurial bone in my body after starting a couple of businesses, I always just love to create and I love to bring important change. And I guess that's just part of what makes me tick. So as I'd walk the poultry barns probably 3-4 times a week, typically with my children, I always ponder, like, how can we one day start our own poultry company? One day, all these birds in the barns, I want them to be my own. I don't want to be growing for a company. I have this large infrastructure. It has potential growing so many wonderful, beautiful chickens, so healthy, but we're just packing the chickens in here, pumping the flocks through and giving them to the integrator. How are we going to do this? So pondered that for years. And the light bulb moment came when I was sitting outside a barn with a local farmer discussing the challenges in the poultry industry. He was a poultry farmer as well. And he's like, have you ever considered organic? Because I think that's going to be your solution. Your cost to produce isn't going to be competitive, but organic is niche enough. So I rush home and fired up the old slow desktop and I Google organic chicken. I started reading the standards for the first time. And that's before the sun went down, I knew exactly what I was going to do. And I think it was within the close of the week, I had found a farm that had been sitting dormant, ordered 300 chickens, and then went to work frantically preparing the barn to be able to be suitable for those 300 chickens. So it was kind of like, once the light bulb went off, we don't have to know what's around the next corner. Let's start running. So when we ordered those first 300 chicks from the hatchery, I had called a local processor and they had agreed to process those birds. But a few weeks after those chickens were at our farm and growing fast and doing so well, they called back and said, we're not interested in doing such a small group. That's too complicated. We're no longer willing to process your chickens. So I went into panic mode because, you know, what am I going to do with 300 chickens that are growing quickly, nowhere to go? But that was an important pivot for us because it showed us how volatile it was, depending on someone else to take care of your processing needs, which opened our eyes to that. And without that, I don't think we'd have our own processing capabilities. But also it made us make about 1,000 phone calls and frantically look for someone. And then we found this wonderful partnership with this small outfit up in Northern Virginia who was in need of humanely raised organic chickens. And they had a gap that I could fill perfectly. They had a small processing operation that could process about 1,500 a day. So we formed a partnership and it was a beautiful fit. So that door would not have opened if if they hadn't declined. So in hindsight, when I was extremely frustrated, I had no idea it'd be the biggest blessing of the entire journey.
What's the story today?
So we worked with that facility, and that was a great partnership. I was working with them and selling all of my chickens to them and catching chickens at night, 2 o'clock, several mornings a week. I'd be up there with the crew, loading crates, trucking chickens, doing all the things that a small business needs to do, you know, keeping your overhead low. But also knew that one customer operation has its vulnerabilities as well. And if I wanted to ensure that this newfound success on my farm, where I had found what I had dreamed about of owning everything on my farm, farming the way I believed it should be done, I needed to create our own processing capabilities. A lot of things came together and found a package of used processing equipment from an old bankrupt plant in Forest, Mississippi. I found a big old abandoned processing facility in downtown Harrisonburg. And just stars aligned that everything coming together, we could create fairly substantial capabilities for pennies on the dollars. That's what gave us a great start. When we had that facility put together and ready to open in spring of 2014, exactly 2 years after we ordered the first 300 chickens, it was going to be capable of processing more than I could produce just on my farm. That created the opportunity to partner with other farmers, which is what allowed us to create the partnership model of how we partner with farmers. And that's what we call the farmer-focused model. And we went and sat at kitchen tables, talked with farmers, discussed this, because we had a real opportunity. And we didn't care how the industry did it. We didn't care how the integrators did it. We were starting from scratch, and we could do it however was best for us. And that's where farmers said the same thing. I want to own the birds in my barns, which most consumers do not know that 99% of the poultry farmers across the country do not own the birds in their barns. They're owned by the company, and they're just paid to take care of those birds. The farmers, everybody said, I want to own the birds in my farm. I want operational control, and I don't want to be paid in this tournament system that makes us all compete against each other. We want clear and transparent pay terms. And so that's what the farmer-focused model brings, is that full ownership and clear and transparent pay terms. So when the birds come to the farms, all the farmers know exactly to the cent per pound what they're going to be paid when the birds leave. Everybody's paid the same. There's not some scale based on what technology you have in the barn or don't. Everybody's paid the same. And that's one thing that's really important to us, because that helps all farms be profitable.
How does what they're paid compare with your average medium to large scale poultry farmer that's working for a vertically integrated chicken processing unit?
It would be about 30 to 35% more, which translates into about 2 cents a pound. That doesn't sound like much, but when you increase your net income by 30, 35%, that's a fairly substantial raise for the same infrastructure cost.
I was interviewing a woman the other day, and she said, you know what, if they're not able to make a living wage because they're working for a company that's making a profit, it's not a family farm. It may have a family, but they're not in control.
That's right. That is very important to us. So a lot of the large integrated companies will pay farmers a fairly large subsidy to construct new barns, even up to 30, 40% of the total construction cost, so that they don't have to increase the pay per pound, so that it can kind of stay flat. So if they need more housing, they help pay for the housing instead of raising everyone's pay. And I always said, a farmer focus will never do that. We need to be paying our farmers in a way that their farm's cash flow at the ratios that a bank requires. And if a farm cash flows at those ratios, it's creating a living wage above and beyond expenses and debt service and those things.
So how many farmers are working for Farmer Focus now?
We are excited to be tapping on 100 farm partnerships as of right now. That translates into producing about 500,000 chickens a week.
Just for context, in the U.S. alone, 8 billion chickens are processed each year, which translates to about 153.5 million chickens a week.
That has been a steady growth curve ever since we opened the doors. That was almost 9 years ago that we opened the processing facility.
The sale of organic chicken in the United States has grown by double-digit percentages in 4 of the past 5 years.
We started out with 15,000 a week, and I think we ended that year at about 45,000 birds a week, and have just slowly, I don't know if you call it slowly, but we've just grown somewhat steady ever since.
And what is your footprint in terms of where those farmers are?
The majority of the farmers are within an hour or so of our processing facility. We try to keep the drive short. You don't want to truck a live bird too far from the farm to the facility. Be mindful of the humidity and taking good care of these chickens, especially when it's cold outside. We tarp the trailers and make sure the cold wind's not blowing on them, you know, those kinds of things. So we like to spread out for biosecurity reasons. So if a disease outbreak would happen or something, we wouldn't have too many farmers in any close proximities to too many other farmers. But at the same time, we want to keep them close so that we can focus on humane aspects and the logistic costs.
And with processing 500,000 chickens a week, what's your market distribution look like?
Primarily east of the Mississippi. And we're in about 5,000 retail stores up and down the East Coast.
And what are your goals? What do you see in the next, let's call it 10 years?
Yeah, so I'll step back a little bit to that. So the company's mission statement is to promote and protect generational family farms. And I think we're doing that very well. We have so many really neat success stories of farmers that have been on the verge of bankruptcy and now doing exceedingly well at building onto their farm, buying a neighbor farm. We have stories of the next generation coming back to farming that actually left the family farm and pursued careers in other, and now they've came back and taken over the family farm. Just like tear-jerking, really cool stories that just touch our hearts. And really, during the hard times, and trust me, we've had the hard times, the impact of this mission is what just spurred us on. And we knew how bad the industry needed our success. I mean, I'm talking the farmers needed our success, because our model has received a lot of attention because we are the only one doing it this way. And at first people would tell us, well, you'll never survive. You'll be bankrupt within a year or two. Well, a year came around. Well, you'll be bankrupt by year two. Well, so you survived and you've actually made it. Well, this will never work at scale.
Let me just note here that Farmer Focus is the number 2 organic chicken company in 2022 and 2023.
And then when we did reach a scale, they're like, well, how are you making it work? So now we've got to explain that. And, you know, Secretary Vilsack has come down and visited us, spent time with us, digging deep into the model, how it works.
He's referring to Tom Vilsack, the secretary to the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
We work with USDA on a lot of programs for farmers and things, and especially related to the poultry industry and helping them understand how it can be done, helps them position to drive impact for farmers even across the country. So that's been some of the special recognition that we've received for this unique model that can have impact far beyond just the farmers that we touch directly. But the company's vision is recently updated to be the number 1 protein brand for those who care about people, animal, and planet. And we look at this group of farmers, this unique model, and we say, okay, we have something very special. We have this thriving community of farmers. We have this farmer-focused brand that has this loyal following. How do we continue to build on it and expand on what we've done and to become the number 1 brand for people, for those who care about people, animal, and planets? It takes a lot deeper look into our supply chain, all the way back to where the crops are grown. There's so much opportunity to drive sustainability, regenerative practices that impact the planet, sequester lots of carbon, while taking a more circular approach to your supply chain, instead of this elongated approach to bringing grain from other countries or from the other side of this country and growing it more with local farmers. It's also to create a more circular approach with how producing the bedding that the chickens need. Then the manure that comes from the barn goes back to the farm that's growing the bedding or the farmer that's growing the crops. So everyone's benefiting from all the different offtakes and from the different operations.
When you mention the crops, you're talking about the crops that are then feeding the chickens. So what are they eating?
Yeah, so the chickens primarily eat corn and soybeans. That is primarily the ration. But we're doing some research on different grains that can be substituted lightly into the ration and still allow for good performance in the barn. Chickens grow well, don't create any issues there, but yet bring a diversity to the rotation of crops for the crop farmer, because diversity in their rotation is some of the keys to success for an organic operation. Their yield improves, their risk reduces, and then everyone wins. You see this, I think of the farm as its own ecosystem. We have poultry, we have the crops, we have the miscanthus grass, and we have the cattle.
In the realm of regenerative farming, miscanthus is a versatile and sustainable crop offering benefits in biomass production, soil health improvement, and renewable energy generation.
So the miscanthus grass is used for bedding into poultry barns. Once it comes out of the poultry barns, as fertilizer, it goes back to the miscanthus grass in the crop fields. You run the cover crops and the summer annuals that are for soil health, and you graze those off to turn them into fertilizer to make the crop fields more fertile and to help in your weed challenging areas. So your farm is a little ecosystem, and you think how Farmer Focus plays into that. Farmer Focus has a bigger footprint and a bigger circle that can take other farms and plug them into this. So it creates a, where my farm is a small dot in the community, the Farmer Focus is a bigger circle that involves more communities and areas that all, that help everyone work together inside of that. So the byproducts that come from the processing plant can then be composted and returned to farms instead of going to landfill. So that's how you take a risk out of a larger operation and return it back to these little smaller footprints.
So you mentioned also some hard times, and I can't imagine a grand experiment like this not having some hard times. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in the first year, we're new to the industry. We get production up and rolling. We've talked with a number of potential customers and, we'd love to buy your chicken. Absolutely. We would need, you know, we want 20,000 pounds a week. We want 10,000 pounds a week. It was big talk and it seemed very promising. And then call back and say, hey, we're starting up next week. We're ready to deliver you some chicken. Like, well, you, do you have a SQF certification, food safety rating and inspection and all these? And we're like, no, I don't even know what that is. And they're like, well, we require that. So then I research it. I'm like, oh my, you have to have 2 years of history before you can even get an SQF food safety audit. And they're like, whoa, so who is going to buy our chicken? And so everything was just a lot harder than we had anticipated. And it caused us to stub our toes a number of times and have to pull back. And so there was organic chickens just a lot harder to sell than what you would think. It's more of a niche product than just the high volume conventional. And there's just a lot more challenges. And the other things was for myself, I needed to hire experts to run a processing plant because I myself was not an expert in running a plant. When I decided to open a plant, I had never set foot in a processing plant before. And here I am. So I needed to hire these experts, and I start calling around to try to find a plant manager in those positions. And I'm like, who are you? And what are you going to do? Well, you're out of your mind. I'm like, I know. So it was really hard to attract talent to come on board. They're like, well, I got a good job. You're high risk. Like, I know, but this is going to be fun. It took us multiple years to find the talent that we needed that was actually the right fits to run the plant and things. So that was a journey in itself, obtaining the talent when you have no reputation, no name, you've stubbed your toes a few times, it's harder starting up, cash is running short. And it's like inviting someone to walk in the fire with you. So fortunately, in 2016, we hired a guy named Dr. Dan White. When we hired him, the industry took notice. And that's where we really felt the shift in the talent that we could obtain, because we'd be calling people to interview them and things and be like, Dr. Dan works for you? Like, yeah. Like, oh, all of a sudden we were looked at differently. So that really helped move the needle on our talent acquisition.
Who's he?
He was someone who had been around in the industry more as a consultant and or anybody who had challenges with USDA issues in their plant. He was just this high level plant expert. So we hired Dr. Dan as a consultant, and he came in to help us fix some problems in our operations. And we just really clicked. So within a few months, we're like, Dr. Dan, why don't you just stay here? He's like, man, I love it here. And that's what he did. So he quit his consulting gig and become a full-time employee because we just clicked and he loved the mission. And he's like, yeah, this is where I want to be.
I'm thinking back to when you were 17 and you were curious and questioning and left home. I'm curious about how your daughter's built and if she's curious and pushing you to consider anything new or different.
I think my children have definitely a little bit of a chip off the block. And so I think what my experience has shown me, though, is that challenging the status quo and asking questions is good, and you need to let it happen. But that's not without its challenges, because she's stubborn just like I was, but she's very operationally minded. She loves animals. The biggest problem is she wants every kind of species on the farm, but I love her passion for it. And she says regularly that she feels like that's her life's calling, and she plans to be a poultry farmer long term at this point.
Now, your birds, they're in solid buildings, meaning they're not on pasture. What's their footprint like and how many birds and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so we wanted to take a kind of a middle of the road approach, right? So you have the industry that runs birds in darked out barns and packs them in there. And then you have the full pasture programs, which are absolutely fabulous and I love. This is kind of a middle of the road approach where you use poultry barns, some old, some new, some curtains, some open, and some closed, and it's an outdoor access program. So the birds have access to pasture, and they are required to have natural light, an enriched environment. So we take those same barns and relax the density down so the birds have plenty of space to hop around and move and everything. If there's any standard that I have the most conviction in, it's reducing the density in the barn to where the birds have plenty of room to maintain their natural habits of hopping around, perching on things. And then that really helps the air quality when the birds aren't as tight in the barn. So the air quality is good. And we require very strict monitoring on the air quality and the ammonia levels that are in the barn. So then, accessed outdoors, some flocks just crowd to go out and other flocks don't as much. And you don't really know why. But chickens are a bird that likes to have a roof over its head. It feels vulnerable when it's out in the open to hawks and things, whether it's a pasture bird or in a barn. So we have shade structures outside and little enrichments and areas that entice them to go out. We really focused on how to create the most humane environment and replicate Mother Nature the most while producing at a volume and keeping meat affordable. So that was really important to us, is that we could affordably provide the highest quality organic chicken that we could and go above and beyond just organic standards. So 100% of our farms are certified humane and 100% of our farms are GAP level 3.
GAP stands for Global Animal Partnership, which is an animal welfare certification that allows for the best natural living environments, better emotional well-being of the animals, and better health and productivity. There are different GAP ratings. It goes from GAP 1, which is the lowest rating and has the lowest restrictions, up to GAP 3, that has the highest restrictions, meaning it requires the lowest density in barns, minimum amount of candlelight in barns, and outdoor access.
And those are the standards that our farmers operate under. We don't have to come out to our farms and tell them how to run their place, because we require our farmers to adhere to those certifications. So that's one of the things that's important inside of our model, is that we're not policing our farmers. The standards are policing our farmers and creating the guidelines.
Are you still sourcing your chicks from outside of your own operation?
Yes. We source feed and chicks from third-party suppliers. And that's an important relationship for a couple reasons. One, hatcheries and feed mills are very expensive, and we don't want to spend the money on those, or can't afford to spend the money on those. And we want to continue our focus on what we do best, which is growing and marketing organic chicken. And another benefit to that relationship that we didn't understand at first is that it's kind of like a three-legged stool. It's the company, the farmers, and then the hatchery feed mill suppliers. And the hatchery and the feed mill supply the farmers, and we help hold the hatchery and the feed mill accountable to price, spec, consistency, and all of those things, and then make it available to our farmers. So if we own the hatchery and the feed mill and something was off or some quality wasn't right, the farmer would be frustrated with us. But in this case, the farmer's frustrated with the third party hatchery and the feed mill, and then we work together to make sure the farmer's credited or taken care of in that scenario. So it keeps us from being the bad guy in a lot of those situations. Another thing is, as those being suppliers that are third party, that is their business and they do it very well. And if they lose sight of maintaining quality based on trying to save two pennies on something, it's going to hurt their core business. So it helps keep us from being tempted to cut corners, which helps us maintain a high quality standard across the board.
And your current challenges, like with any legs of those stools, is there one area that is most vexing now as you're looking toward the future?
Probably the most challenges come from not owning our own hatchery, because the amount of time it takes to get a baby chick to us is actually a lot more than what people realize. You got to think ahead about a year or more into the supply chain, because a hen is in the barn for 6 months before it starts laying eggs.
I think it's important for the end customer who's eating the chicken, and also the people who are the middle who selling the chicken, need to understand what you just said, that this is not instantaneous. This isn't magic. I can't produce an additional 1,000 birds overnight. It just doesn't work that way. I think that's a really important component that our society has let go of in our brains. So what if Purdue came knocking on your door tomorrow and offered you a bunch of money for this operation?
Well, they have come knocking, but they didn't say a price. You know, I'm not going to say that a strategic partnership wouldn't be beneficial to us expanding on our mission at some point, but we're not completely closed-minded to conversations, but that's definitely not the goal. The goal is to continue to build a solid company that builds on this mission. And if at some point down the road, a partnership of some form makes sense, can't say we won't talk about it.
And other companies or operations that are doing something similar to Farmer Focus out there that you know about?
Well, no one is using this exact same model of partnering with the farmers like this and doing it at this scale. There's a lot of great outfits that you're aware of with Pasture Bird and some of the other folks who are even more niche product than what Farmer Focus is doing. And it's fabulous product. And I'm big supporters of what they do and the regenerative practices that they have built in.
Farmer Paul Grieve of Pasture Bird appeared on the Talk Farm to Me podcast not too long ago. I'm going to link that episode for you in the show notes.
We're trying to take in the concept and doing it a little bit larger scale. So we're kind of charting our own course in this. And I am not aware of any operation doing it at this scale. And we don't want them to follow too closely. We like our little niche, but we want to drive change in this industry. And if we're going to drive change, that means we've got to help some others come alongside.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share with people?
The one thing that we've been asked numerous times, like, well, how can you just pay your farmers more? How does that work? You know, you taking a hit on the margin. And I think that's important in our model as to how we affordably bring a product to our consumers that they are very proud to support. But we've allowed our farmers full ownership of everything on their farm. So it's not on our balance sheet. We're compensating them for some of that risk, but they're also self-incentivized to create the highest level of care for these chickens and this level of animal husbandry that is extremely rare for our industry. And I would say likely impossible without allowing this ownership. The cost to grow a chicken is lower for us than what we've heard from some of our competitors and others that share their costs. So that's essentially what we're giving back to our farmers, which allows us to bring a higher quality product at a very competitive price. And then it's up to us to be very well managed in our operations to where we are keeping it lean and mean and having comparable operational costs to where we can deliver a superior product at the same or lesser price than competitors.
You said that your farm is the biggest of the 100 farms that are in your partnership. What's the range from smallest to biggest in terms of numbers of chickens?
It sounds significant, but one of our smaller farms would place about 10,000 chickens at a time. And that would be one of our smallest farms. Up to my family operation, which is a little over 200,000 chickens at a time. So that is a lot of chickens. But that's part of the vision for the farm. How do we grow more chickens more efficiently, improve animal welfare, all at the same time, and lessen the environmental impact? So we included a lot of technology and labor saving things and environment. It is monitored at a lot higher level. And we went above and beyond. I think we're 4 times the amount of natural light that's required for an operation. We put in additional access doors, additional enrichments. Everything is above and beyond. I'm extremely proud of the environment that we've created, despite it being at a larger scale. I feel like our environment for these chickens is some of the best that's available out there. So that's part of the vision, to show that you can do it at 10,000 and you can do it at a larger scale, but you also can't lose sight of all these little details.
Curious if you have any advice for us as we're talking to smaller farmers about their operations.
Yeah, there's multiple angles that farmers need support. And one of them is the financial aspects of their operation. The majority of farmers have financial barriers to taking their farm to the next level that would take them to the next level of efficiency or cash flow. And without special programs, grants, support, they're kind of handcuffed. And I believe that the future and the health of mankind is determined by the health of the soil and plants' ability to uptake those nutrients. Animals consume those, then we use those in our bodies, and that's how we maintain a healthy lifestyle. So taking care of our farmers in a way that they can take care of their land and afford to do it is just such an important part of the cycle. And one thing I want to mention, on 100% of Farmer Focus packages of delicious chicken is a Meet Your Farmer code, and you go to the website and you put in that 4-letter code and it takes you to the farmer that raised that chicken for you. And since the farmers are the star of the show and they're the ones that are working so hard behind the scenes and they rarely have the voice and they never get their face seen, we wanted to put the farmers front and center right where they belong.
So I think we should make farming more personal.
I'm not going to remember the exact statistics, but it was about 100 years ago when over 70% of people had animals on their homestead. You had not a big farm, but you had a pig, you had a cow, you had 10 chickens, you had everything. You fed your family, you grew your own food, you had your own garden. And that has more than completely flipped. I think back in the 70s, it had flipped to, instead of about 35% of people not growing their own food, you had only about 35% of people growing their own food. And now it's down like 2 or 3%. People have become a lot more distant to their food, which makes everybody more vulnerable to that complex supply chain and disruption. Because if that breaks, you're not getting your food.
Right. I think people had a little taste of that during the pandemic. I believe that if you're going to be the 98% that has the privilege of not having to take care of the chickens and tend the garden and do the weeding and the planting and the harvesting and the getting it to market. If you have that privilege, then you need to pay attention to the 2% that do.
And that's one reason I love your podcast, and I was listening to a number of them, and it helps shed light on how important it is that consumers support brands that are doing the right thing for farmers, animals, planet, and making and driving this change. And you say, well, what can I as a consumer do who has nothing to do with a farm? Well, you need to be supporting a brand that is driving change. It doesn't have to be Farmer Focus. Appreciate if you support Farmer Focus, but one of the brands that is helping drive change to impact each of those key stakeholders in the process is something that consumers do, because consumers don't understand the power they hold with how they vote with their dollar when they shop.
People just don't realize the power that they have.
The whole system has a lot of opportunity, but it does come back to the consumers driving the change and having the most power with their voice and where they spend their dollar. And I didn't realize how strong my voice as a consumer was years ago either. And by not speaking up or not supporting the brand with your dollar, you're really endorsing it and empowering Big Ag in the systems that will continue to cycle and exploit. So you do need to go to your supermarket when you're at the meat counter. You ask why you don't see what you're looking for and say it consistently. And then when you do find it, support those brands and it will drive change a lot more than what people realize.
This has been another episode of Talk Farm to Me, the podcast that brings you closer to the power of your many, many choices, one farmer at a time. And I think you feel the power of those choices from listening to Corwin Heatwall of Farmer Focus. You know, putting your food first, but making sure the farmer is right there alongside, making a living, able to take pride in a thriving business. That's not something we hear enough about. Often, the food is first, and the farmer is invisible. That's something that the Four Farmers Movement and the Talk Farm to Me podcast are trying to change. You have power in your choices. What chicken you choose, and how your food is produced, and whether or not your farmers get to thrive. This is what Farmer Focus is all about. I'm going to leave you with this. On the back of the Farmer Focus package, it says this. As a sixth-generation farmer, I saw the financial and emotional toll that traditional farming had on my community and the animals we raised. In 2014, I started Farmer Focus with a dream of building a system that works for all, a 100% organic model using sustainable farming methods to treat animals humanely while providing fair pay to farmers. If you're reading this, you're helping make that dream a reality. And for that, I thank you. Corwin Heatwall, founding farmer, Farmer Focus. If you live east of the Mississippi and would like to find Farmer Focus products in your local supermarket, head to www.farmerfocus.com. We'll also leave it in the show notes. And click on the store locator. Punch in your zip code and it will point you to the nearest store. If you are outside of that area, you can check out one of the direct-to-consumer companies like ButcherBox, Crowd Cow, and Fresh Direct to find farmer-focused products. Whether this is your first episode of Talk Farm to Me or your 47th, since you are still here with me, can you do me a really big favor? Can you share this with a friend? You can share this episode right from the app you're listening in. And you can also just share the entire show and let them pick out the episode that calls out to them the most. Talk Farm to Me is an important part of the Four Farmers Movement, putting farmers first and bringing you closer to them. Thanks for being here on the farm today, talking farm and filling our insatiable curiosity about what's going on with farmers so we can better understand and deconstruct our concerns about the future of food. Talk Farm to Me is produced by me, with editing support from Sonia Dillon, with original music and sound design by Russell Chapa. Don't forget to check out the show notes for links relevant to this show and for other helpful resources, including how to get in touch. See you soon, right around the corner, maybe at a farm near you.
Saving money on protecting your garden. Now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save.